So let me go to some tweets. Marie Jacobson says, I've been talking Alzheimer's for over a year. The only one putting that thought in my head was the man child himself. Fair enough. Jeff Mayer says, wouldn't comprehensive ignorance, inability to control impulses, and disdain for everyone in government make Trump unable to perform duties? Well, in a sense, and since his agenda is horrific, we're pretty happy he's unable to perform the duties, except when it comes to foreign policy, where he presents a danger to the world. Speaking of which, Mike has the best tweet summarizing all of this. He just writes, President Aerys Targaryen II. Indeed, the Mad King. And like Aerys Targaryen, he might want to light the whole place on fire.
Does he have a hot daughter though? He does. He does have a hot daughter.
Oh no, the only problem is that makes Ivanka Daenerys.
But I mean, she falls a little short, you know, because Daenerys believes in freeing people.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
And doesn't like her. Daenerys' main thing is not selling shoes.
True.
Right. All right. Anyways, all right. What do we got to start with, Anna?
All right. We're starting with something a little different today. A little bit of entertainment news with a political bent. Josh Whedon and his wife are unfortunately divorcing after 16 years of marriage. Now, that's not something that we typically talk about on the show, but the issue of feminism came up because Whedon has gotten a lot of recognition for his role of being what he refers to as a male feminist, right? Now, his soon-to-be ex-wife, Kai Cole, is irritated with the fact that he continues to take on that title, considering the fact that they're divorcing because of his infidelity. So really the topic of discussion here is someone able to be a quote unquote feminist if he is mistreating the woman in his life, okay? So Kai Cole wrote this piece in The Wrap, an op-ed about her experience, and I want to give you a little portion of it just so you kind of get where she's coming from and then we can have a discussion. She writes that 15 years later, 15 years after they were married, when he was done with our marriage and finally ready to tell the truth, he wrote me, when I was running Buffy, I was surrounded by beautiful, needy, aggressive young women. It felt like I had a disease, like something from a Greek myth. Suddenly, I'm a powerful producer and the world is laid out at my feet and I can't touch it, but he did touch it. So let me give you a little bit more. She writes, when he walked out of our marriage and was trying to make things seem less bewildering to me to help me understand how he could have lied to me for so long, he said, in many ways, I was the height of normal in this culture. We're taught to be providers and companions at the same time, to conquer and acquire, specifically sexually, and I was pulling off both. All right. Let's open up this discussion.
Okay, so this is a super uncomfortable discussion to have.
Absolutely.
First of all, it's about their personal lives. And I, in a sense, I wish we weren't discussing it at all because it's between them. And I, her being super mad at him after 15 years of cheating on her is, you know, completely understandable. He put out a very brief statement saying, look, some of the comments in her editorial were misleading. But I'm just going to leave it at that for the sake of the kids and everyone else, which is understandable. So take everything that's anyone says in a divorce with a grain of salt on both sides, because I've seen people say terrible, terrible things, and sometimes they're not exactly right when they say that. The reason to have the discussion is because it's an important and interesting issue. Can you still be a feminist if you're cheating on your wife? As an example. And I think the answer is yes. And I think that she says she's the last kind of person to have made this public, but she felt she needed to. Okay, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why you, I know why you thought you needed to. Whether you actually needed to is a different question. And I'm trying desperately not to judge them as people, you know, as to whether she should have put this editorial in or not, he should have cheated on her or not.
Yeah.
My inclination is they neither one of them should have done that, but that's not that important.
Yeah, I don't even want to get into that, right? She made the decision to write the piece, she did it, and it is what it is. He allegedly cheated on her, and I don't even want to get into the details of that. I don't care. And I don't think it should be, you know, something that people get involved in and start judging people for. But I do think that it is an interesting question as to whether or not someone can be considered a so-called feminist if he is cheating on his wife. And so, look, it's a tough question, right? Because she outlines some of the emotional trauma she suffered as a result of this. And so it seems like it would be impossible for someone to be a feminist if they're mistreating a woman. But at the same time, here's the thing, infidelity is one of the top reasons why people divorce. It happens all the time, and it happens among average people in average relationships. This is a celebrity, someone who's very closely connected to the entertainment world, and he's a man who has power. So of course there are gonna be people that are gonna be throwing themselves at him. And I think a lot of men in those circumstances at some point might make the mistake of cheating, right? And so I don't wanna go overboard and like judge him and whatever, but the reality is, yeah, people cheat. Like, the idea of monogamy is a great idea, but are we as humans built to be monogamous for the rest of our lives with the same person? So I don't think that his feminism is necessarily closely tied to his relationship. I think you can be a feminist and mess up time to time, and I think he messed up pretty royally, but I don't wanna say that like anything that he's done in fighting for gender equality is now out the door because of the fact that he cheated.
Yeah, I think there's two issues here. One is around monogamy and feminism, the other one's about how we judge people overall in society. So on that first issue that Anna just addressed, I'm with you, Anna. Look, monogamy is a hell of a thing, and I feel really lucky and have great peace of mind that I have not cheated on my wife. So I don't have the stress, nor have I put stress on her, of having to tell lie after lie and for 15 years figure out, wait, was I supposed to say that? Was I supposed to say this, etc. But when other people do it, I don't judge them for it. I mean, are you guys sure we're all meant to be monogamous? You're really sure of that? And so to me, that transgression is, I'm not trying to downplay it because it involves heartbreak.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right? I mean, and a ton of emotions, rightfully so, and deceit, right? But it is one of the most common human foibles there is. Mm-hmm. I don't think you take away everything else that a person's ever worked for based on that. I mean, my absolute role model, hero, mm-hmm. is Martin Luther King. There's a good deal of evidence that he was not monogamous. So does that mean he shouldn't get credit for the civil rights era? That's insane. There's good evidence FDR was not perfectly monogamous. Does that mean he shouldn't get credit for uplifting hundreds of millions of Americans through the programs that he did?
Look,
that's insane.
There's no such thing as a perfect human, and we're all flawed. We all have our vices, and you know, I'm not making excuses for what happened, but I will say that if we judge people based on their worst actions and then we just use that as our outlook on them, then no one is gonna have a positive, you know, reputation. Everyone has their negative moments, moments that they're embarrassed by or humiliated of. So there's that. But the one thing that I do want to call him out on, if it's true, because remember, this is her perspective and this is her side. The only thing that he said is, you know, even though there are a few inaccuracies here, I'm not gonna respond to it because out of respect, right? But the one thing that she accuses him of is blaming his infidelity on the patriarchy. Essentially mm-hmm. saying like, oh, but society expects all of this of men, and because of these expectations, you know, I faltered. If he really made those excuses, come on.
Yeah.
Really, no. You're gonna blame the patriarchy on that?
No. I'm 1,000% with Anna on this one. Look, dude, just leave it alone, right? So again, people say terrible things in a divorce and I don't know exactly what's true or not true. But if he said that, that's a preposterous statement. No, you did it because you were horny. Don't give me this crap about patriarchy and how it was the expectations that were, no, the expectations came from your genetic makeup. It's not, so there maybe I'm not as liberal or progressive as other folks where it's, oh, the patriarchy sets the society. To some degree it does, no question about that. Mm-hmm. And so do our genetics. And our genetics are not perfectly monogamous. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to get into the patriarchy to excuse your adultery. That's crazy talk. Now finally, on the second part of the conversation, which is how much should we judge people? Because one of the requests she's making is that he shouldn't get awards anymore for feminism or anything. But he did do those things. He did do those positive things, and he did put out positive images in the media. And so, no, I mean, look, there are lines. So Roman Polanski, rape, underage girl, ran from the law, etc. You don't want to give Roman Polanski awards? I get it, right?
Yeah, so, I want to prosecute Roman
that's
Polanski.
That's right. What we mainly want to do is prosecute him, and we can figure out about his awards later once he's in prison. But if we keep going down that ladder, we get and we say, okay, now take away the awards for this, and that person doesn't shouldn't get recognized for the good works that he did because of XYZ, we're all going to be eliminated.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about, you know, you at your worst and having the entire world know about that, and then having that be like what people use to judge your entire character. I mean, it's unfair. We're all incredibly flawed. Myself included, you're flawed, you're super flawed. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think relationships are hard, marriage is hard. I feel terribly for her because I could imagine being in a situation like that and feeling completely heartbroken by it. But again, you know, you at your worst is not representative of who you are as a person.
Yeah, and look, I don't want anybody to mistake what I'm saying because I am heartbroken for her. It's the same thing that I criticized Bill Clinton for. Look, he shouldn't have been impeached for it, but the lies that he made up, just one, it kind of in Clinton's case, it attacked a woman that he had slept with and pretending they were crazy. Mm-hmm. But when you continue to lie for all those years to your own spouse, it makes her feel like she's the crazy one.
And, yep.
Right? And when in reality, she was right all along. So I'm not minimizing the pain of that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying if we get into that, then there's no getting out. Then because we're all human, and I like the new superhero title that Anna gave me. I'm super flawed. Okay, so I mean, look, I'll give you a super benign example. If all you ever saw of me was, luckily no one videotaped this, was an argument that I had with Steve-O on a basketball court, where the police, we were so loud the police had to come.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it's literally true, okay? You would think that guy's absolutely mental, but that's not the totality of me. I hope that's a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of my life and my character overall. So, I mean, it's the oldest thing in the book, right? We all live in glass houses. Mm-hmm. So let's be a little bit careful where we throw those stones.
Yep. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I will talk about the Navy ship that had a pretty devastating accident. 10 soldiers are still missing. And then later on, we will talk about the purple drink and the CEO who came up with that drink. Where is he now? What is he doing? You don't want to miss it. Come on. Yeah. Give it away.
No, we didn't. You'll see. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you. Historic Larry writes, and can I just mention Kim Horcher did a fantastic job with her eclipse coverage today. Hashtag too strong, hashtag too smart. Mm. I agree. I think I'm going to start wearing that t-shirt around. Too smart. So we did send Kim to cover the solar eclipse live. You saw it on youtube.com/TYT this morning. Or this afternoon, depending on where you are. Some of that coverage will also be up on Nerd Alert. So youtube.com/Nerd Alert, check that out. Kim R writes, and if a lesbian couple considers themselves feminists and one cheats, are they both still feminists? Of course, gender doesn't matter here. So it's an interesting point by Kim. And Joseph S says, can we hear about Cenk's argument with Steve-O on the basketball court during the TYT postgame? Well, ask and ye shall receive. Yes, I will tell you all about that. So come join us at tytnetwork.com/join. You get to hear fun stories like that, slash disastrous ones. Mm-hmm. Plus you get the whole show commercial free anytime you want it. Speaking of which, member shout outs today are Patrick Wilson and Jared Fox. Thank you guys. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. A Navy warship has collided with a tanker, and unfortunately, this is the fourth time it has happened in the past year. Now, it's important to keep in mind that this is equipped with a missile defense system, And so as a result, there were a lot of conspiracy theories flying around about its GPS systems being hacked into. However, I want to be clear that there hasn't been any evidence of that so far. Now, let me give you the details and the facts of what actually occurred. Now, Monday's crash marked the fourth time this year a US warship has been involved in an accident in Asian waters. In addition to the 10 missing sailors, the Navy said 5 were injured in the collision. 4 of those were flown by a Singapore Navy helicopter to a hospital in Singapore where they were treated for injuries that are not considered life-threatening. Now, we have a quick report on this incident, which will show you the extent of the damage. We'll come right back and give you more details.
A gaping wound on the port side of the USS John S. McCain. After colliding with an oil tanker close to the entrance of the Malacca Strait, one of the world's busiest shipping routes. 10 sailors are missing, presumed overboard or possibly inside the damaged ship. 5 crew are also injured, and a search and rescue operation is underway. It's reported the crew tried to stem flooding in several places while the vessel headed towards Singapore.
So I just want to say 2 quick things there. One, whenever we show you a video like that, check out the description box because it'll have the full report. If we're showing you a video from someone, they've done a good job with it, and you should watch their full report. You mentioned conspiracy theories. I'm going to disagree with you slightly. I think there is some evidence.
What's the evidence? I mean, I haven't seen evidence based on what I've read.
So what I mean by that is not that there's a smoking gun of a memo from the Pentagon saying, yes, they've hijacked our navigation systems and they've been able to hack into it. But I think there is circumstantial evidence. So let's continue the story and then I'll explain what I think that evidence is.
All right, so just to give you a little more information on the extent of the damage, the Navy reported significant hull damage to the McCain. By the way, this vessel was named after John McCain's father and grandfather, which is why it's called the McCain. They were both in the military, saying there was flooding in berthing compartments as well as machinery and communication rooms. Now, there will be an investigation into this accident and several others that occurred over the last year. James Mattis would like this investigation to take place to kind of figure out why this keeps happening. Let's go to graphic 7, just to give you an outline of the other Navy warships that have experienced similar collisions. On June 17th, the USS Fitzgerald collided with a container ship off the coast of Japan. On May 9th, the guided missile cruiser USS Lake Champlain was struck by a small fishing boat off the Korean Peninsula. In late January, the guided missile cruiser USS
Antietam
ran aground while trying to anchor in Tokyo Bay. So these collisions keep happening, and it's just strange because this isn't typical. So I can see what you mean by some circumstantial evidence, but again, there's no smoking gun at all. So I want to be clear about that.
Okay, so first off, just a quick thing on the John McCain. Both his dad and his grandfather were legendary admirals in the Navy. And part of the reason why he was able to get into the military, he was a captain himself, John McCain was. But he crashed 4 different times. And so Trump, by the way, in reaction to this story, said he prefers ships that don't crash. He didn't say that, but he actually said, oh, that's too bad.
Well, he said that's too bad in regard to the 10 missing sailors. And so that appeared to be a little bit of an inadequate response to something
later,
pretty tragic.
Yeah, some official used his account to tweet out, our thoughts and prayers are with our boys and et cetera, right? So, okay, now on to the main event. So first of all, if Monk has taught me anything, it is that there are no coincidences. So 4 ships in 1 year, that is way too high a number. Now, if it was just a Korean boat fishing vessel happened to run into a giant ship, yeah, that knucklehead on the fishing boat made a mistake, that's nothing. And if there was 1 accident and that's still nothing. But 4 accidents all in 1 year, I mean, there is a second theory. The second theory is Donald Trump's in charge and incompetence reigns supreme. And the fish stinks from the head down, mm-hmm. and everything is becoming competent, and everything's a mess, and we're not winning with it anymore. But I think that's very unlikely. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get credit for the economy as soon as he walks in. He also doesn't get blamed for all the things that go in, happen as soon as he comes in. Now, on to the theory about why I think that there are issues here. The US military in South Korea began a 10-day military exercise on Monday. The second coincidence is that this crash happens on Monday. So just as, and all four of the crashes were in Asian waters. So we're about to do an exercise with South Korea. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, one of our ships can't control itself and runs into a giant oil tanker. The oil tankers are enormous. So here's what one, yes?
Real quick, I just want to give the audience a detail, and it actually kind of speaks to the point you're trying to make. So they apparently lost the ability to steer momentarily. It was a temporary thing, and then they were able to steer again, but it was too late.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Right. Here, a US Navy official told CNN that the McCain had experienced a loss of steering before the collision. Yeah, so if someone's hacking into our systems, that's exactly what would happen, and that's why you would have the accident. So it's not a conspiracy theory if you have good circumstantial evidence that collisions are happening because you lost control of the ability to steer the ship. Now, it might turn out that it's just a technical failure. There's 1,000 things that it could turn out. That's why Anna's right to say there's no smoking gun. We have no idea if North Korea, China, Russia, whatever hacked into our ships and etc. But for them to have the inability to steer right before they ran into the other ship, another wild coincidence, and now a series of tremendous coincidences. Now I'm going to quote one other person here, and he says, how does a state of the army, and is an expert in the field, how does a state of the art Navy destroyer equipped with multiple radar systems and communications gear with a full bridge watch not see, detect, and evade a 30,000 ton slow moving behemoth? So when you put all that together, something is amiss here. And I don't know what it is, I don't know who did it. I don't know if it's just a technical failure on our part, or if there's an adversary here who's messing with our ability to steer the ships at important moments. But if there is a chance that it's the latter, oh boy, that internal review that they have just ordered is more than necessary, and it is an incredibly high priority. And let me add one last thing that's very important here. If it turns out it was a foreign power who did this, and in the last accident, we lost 7 people. 7 of our sailors died. Mm-hmm. Now we have another 10 missing. If that's an attack on the United States and we've lost some of our service people to those attacks, that's as serious as a heart attack. So I'm afraid of what they might find out in this investigation, mm-hmm. because then we might have to take action. That is not good news for the whole world.
All right, moving on to some other news. The Secret Service has depleted its funds necessary to pay at least a portion of its agents. One third of its agents have already hit the cap for hours and overtime, which means that some of them might have to work for free unless the Congress does something to allocate more funding for the Secret Service. Now, a lot of this has to do with the fact that last year was a tumultuous one, to say the least, which required a great deal of Secret Service to get involved to protect presidential candidates and be involved in the political conventions that took place. But Donald Trump's administration is also not making things easy when you consider the fact that he's constantly traveling for pleasure, and also, he has a gigantic family, which also requires Secret Service. Now, agents must protect Trump, who has traveled almost every weekend to his properties in Florida, New Jersey, and Virginia, and his adult children, whose business trips and vacations have taken them across the country and overseas. Now, the part of this that is frustrating, to say the least, is his sons, who are constantly traveling to other countries for Trump-related business, also get Secret Service. And so taxpayers are footing the bill for that, and that's not related to work for our country or for the government. It's solely based on work that they're doing for their own personal businesses. More than 1,000 agents have already hit the federally mandated caps for salary and overtime allowances that were meant to last the entire year. Since his inauguration, Trump has taken 7 trips to his estate in Mar-a-Lago, traveled to his Bedminster, New Jersey golf club 5 times, and returned to Trump Tower in Manhattan once. Now, I have more details for you, but just to give you an idea of how much all of this costs, take a look at the following video.
The repeated visits to his golf club in New Jersey, round-the-clock security for the First Lady and their son inside Trump Tower in Midtown Manhattan until recently. Tonight, there's more scrutiny on the strain of those operations for the men and women who protect President Trump and his extended family.
They are now working overtime hours they are not getting paid for.
Today, Secret Service Director Randolph Allis said about 1,100 agency employees will work overtime hours this year.
Yeah, and just to give you an idea, under Donald Trump, 42 people have protection, a number that includes 18 members of his family. That's up from 31 during the Obama administration.
Okay, so there's things that they can't do anything about and things that they can. So can't do anything about the fact there's 42 people in your family. His wife and his son stayed behind in New York until June so he can finish the school year there. Some have criticized that because that involves a whole nother security apparatus at Trump Tower in New York, and it's perpetual, whereas you could have one apparatus in Washington. Okay, but you know, I think that it could be argued that that's nitpicking. The one thing that he could definitely control is how much he goes to
golfing,
vacations slash outings at his own places, which he's using mainly for advertising.
That's right.
So not only does he keep talking about his winter White House, or in a reference to Mar-a-Lago, and now he's got a summer White House. These are all giant ads, multi-million dollar ads for his properties. And he even had the temerity after the Charlottesville press conference, which was an absolute disaster, where he blamed the counter-protesters as well, to then plug his properties in Virginia, which he also goes to. The man has no bounds of decency or morality. And here's a guy who criticized Obama's vacations, immediately taking far more vacations. He's in the middle of a giant 17-day vacation now. After taking so much heat for it, they changed it to, and now it drives me crazy when the press dutifully reports it as such. It's now a working vacation.
Right.
Sure it is. Okay, and so that he can help, but he's not. And so that's, if you're a conservative and you cared about our taxpayer dollars, I mean, they're throwing them away in bushels here. And by the way, can you stay at the White House one goddamn weekend and do your job? You're the president, it's not an easy job. You have to be, yes, you have to be vigilant 24/7, and he's nowhere near that vigilant.
Right, I mean, it's interesting because he'll brag about donating $100,000 to the Department of Education, $100,000 from his, you know, presidential salary, while he also simultaneously cuts millions of dollars or proposes to cut millions of dollars from the department. But here's the thing, how about you keep your salary and just travel less? Especially when it's travel that's completely unnecessary and you're specifically doing it to advertise your businesses. And also, I mean, think about how frustrating it is to have to pay for his sons to travel to other countries for their businesses. And I get it. Look, it's a tough situation because even though it's frustrating, they also need security. I could understand why they would need security. But there could be ways to save money here, and he seems completely unwilling to do it. Also, let me give you an idea of what's being proposed in terms of allocation of additional funding. So there is a proposal to raise the combined salary and overtime cap for agents from $160,000 per year to $187,000 for at least the duration of Trump's first term. Also, last year, Congress did have to approve a one-time fix to ensure that 1,400 agents would be compensated for thousands of hours of overtime earned above compensation limits. So this is an ongoing issue, and again, it's only made worse with all the travel involved with Trump and his family.
There's also the personal enrichment angle. Now, other Republicans have spent $1.3 million on Trump properties. Sometimes just to stay in Washington or to do conferences in Washington at his hotel. But you know, part of the reason they do it is to make him happy. So, you know, he gets personally enriched and then he then has more favors for the people who stayed at his properties. And finally, to give you a sense of how much money is involved here, the Secret Service has already spent $60,000 in golf cart rentals alone this year on his properties. Now, if you really cared about the American taxpayers, you could say, hey, you know what? The golf carts you're using to protect me while I go nonstop golfing at my own property, I'm not going to charge the American government for that. But no, he loves to charge the American government for that. Every one of his outings to Mar-a-Lago has cost at least $3 million. So when, to Anna's point, when he brags about, oh, I'm not even taking my salary, which is, you know, I think for the entirety of the year is about $400,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you've spent almost 10 times that every single time you go to Mar-a-Lago, and you've gone there 7 times already. So please spare me the bragging about how you're not taking a salary, because you're wasting a ton of our money and running our Secret Service into the ground while you're at it.
Yes. All right, moving on to some drug related news. A Florida man has been sentenced to 30 years in prison after he was found guilty of being the quote unquote CEO of the Purple Drink. So if you listen to rap music, you've probably heard a little bit about the Purple Drink. And apparently there is a criminal element to it, and it involves Harrison Garcia, the man who was just sentenced to 30 years in prison. Now, according to federal prosecutors, Garcia was responsible for pumping the South Florida music scene with a concoction, and it's a mix of promethazine with codeine, soda, and Jolly Ranchers. It's also known as Scissorp and Lean. Okay, so this is an amazing story. I don't know, I just found it super fascinating because of how incredibly dumb this criminal is, okay? Mm-hmm. So the reason why he got in trouble and the reason why he got caught was because he was bragging about it on Instagram incessantly. And yeah. So federal prosecutors were like, oh, this guy, we think he might be tied to a string of robberies, string of burglaries with, you know, these drug stores in the South Florida area. Now, the 27-year-old relentlessly boasted online, referring to himself as the CEO of Purple Drink, and even sporting a pendant featuring a diamond encrusted styrofoam cup.
Gee, I wonder if he was doing it. I can't quite tell.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So they opened.
That's what they drink purple drink in. I mean,
the red cup, right?
Yeah, it's styrofoam cups overall.
I think it's those red cups, though. No, it's styrofoam. I don't know. I've never had the purple drink.
Oh, sure, you have a nice little trick there, yeah.
It actually sounds pretty terrible. Like, if I'm at a party, I don't want to fall asleep. It sounds like I'd fall asleep drinking that, but nonetheless.
I mean, look, I'm a square, but if you handed me something and said, like, no, it's okay, I made this at home, I call it purple drink, and it's got drugs in it, I'm like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. Okay, I'm all right. Somebody get me a Coke or a beer,
yeah,
or some vodka or whatever, but I'm not drinking that.
Right. So let's give you some information about his Instagram page and what he posted on there. Records provided by Instagram pursuant to the search warrant revealed direct messages sent and received by Garcia, in which Garcia negotiated with customers for the sale of promethazine with codeine, marijuana, and other controlled substances, and also agreed to provide the requested narcotics. They did go ahead and search his home. After his arrest, Garcia directed police to a stash house in suburban Miami. There, law enforcement found a fully loaded AK-47 assault rifle, a loaded Uzi submachine gun, and 3,000 Xanax pills.
I don't know why they think that he might be doing something wrong. So apparently good police work to get him to admit his stash house. Okay, let me tell you what I think he's guilty of and not guilty of. So, and the burglaries, if proven, where they go in and got the material they needed for the purple drink, it's a 4-team crew that doesn't even involve him. He's apparently
the ringleader.
The ringleader for it. So if that's all proven out, and is apparently it has been in trials, yeah, that's, he should go to prison for that. No question about it. I think that all drugs should be legal. So I think this is, I wouldn't drink this, and it probably has done a decent amount. There's good theories as to how much harm it's done, mm-hmm, in the music industry to some of the people who drank it.
I think it is legal. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is an illegal substance.
Well, but they're charging him with, you know, selling it. If it's perfectly legal, then he's allowed to sell it.
Well, they're not necessarily charged. They didn't necessarily charge him for selling it. They charged him for stealing the material and then reselling it.
So look, I think in terms of drugs, the more legal we make all the drugs, the safer they're going to be, right? So if there's a legal way to do purple drank and it doesn't kill people or really harm them, okay, right? And even if it really harms them, that's their call to make. But if it's tightly regulated, it's still better than some schmuck in Miami who's like, I got styrofoam cups for everybody, right? So even if it's super dangerous, we're better off regulating it than letting hosers in Miami sell it left and right. So I don't know that he should go to jail for anything other than the burglaries. You're saying that's the case anyway, so all right, I guess mission accomplished.
Yeah, based on what I've read about him and what I know about him, he should be in prison. First of all, he had a bunch of illegal weapons. It's not just one thing. It's not like, this guy just had, an inventory of cough syrup and whatever, Jolly Ranchers, and he made this drink and handed it out at parties. That's not what he did. That's only a tiny part of what he did. It was, being the ringleader of these burglaries, having all of these illegal weapons that he wasn't supposed to have possession of, all of these other prescription drugs that he wasn't supposed to have possession of. Those are the things that he did that eventually led to him getting charged and convicted.
Yeah, so there's a general charge that he got convicted on called drug trafficking, but it might be for the things that you could legally have, but that he couldn't legally have because he didn't have a prescription for it. But the bottom line is, let's legalize everything so that it's way safer. Don't trust a random dude in Miami to give you a purple drink, okay? And if you're gonna commit a crime, don't admit to it on Instagram.
Don't brag about it on Instagram.
Not only was the stuff that he, with the pictures and the bragging, but the orders, the illegal orders that he would fill, he would DM on Instagram, which was a treasure trove of confessions for the authorities.
Exactly.
So on the other hand, if you're going to be a criminal, do all of us the favor of being as dumb as Harrison Garcia.
Exactly. All right, real quick story before we end the hour. Donald Trump says that he wants to build a wall in order to prevent criminals and drug traffickers from bringing drugs across the border. But an interesting new trend is emerging. With drone technology improving, more and more drug traffickers are actually using drones in order to get drugs past the border. Now, police recently busted a 25-year-old American citizen, George Edwin Rivera, about 2,000 yards from the border after spotting his drone in flight. Authorities recovered the drone as well as a huge stash of drugs, 13 pounds of meth, which is worth a reported $46,000 on the streets. So here's a picture of the drone that he used. Its retail value is about $5,000, and it was created specifically to carry heavy material. So people in the film industry use this drone in order to carry cameras and do aerial shots. And so it's interesting because not only has this happened at the border, apparently drug traffickers are now using these drones to drop drugs in prison yards. Just last week, a smaller hobby drone was used to drop off a package containing marijuana, a mobile phone, and a razor blade into a prison yard in Michigan. That was actually the third time it happened in the state. So,
yeah. So, well, there goes Donald Trump's idea of, well, we got to build a wall because otherwise, with a fence, that the guys are throwing, drug dealers are throwing 60 pounds of marijuana over the fence and hitting people in the head. He claimed that. That's never happened. It's not documented. It's not true. It's another crazy Trump lie. So, but in this case, they don't have to throw the 60 pounds of marijuana over the wall anymore. You could just fly it in on a drone. And yes, sometimes they get caught, but oftentimes they don't get caught. So
just
now the point of the wall.
Legalize the drugs, legalize and regulate the drugs, please, for the love of God. A wall isn't gonna solve the drug problem, okay? Drug traffickers are gonna find a way to get the drugs across the border if there is demand for it. Just legalize or decriminalize it, regulate it, and take the power away from the cartels. Why is it so hard for people to understand that?
No, Anna, I think if we go just one more year with the war on drugs, we'll turn it right around and we'll win. Whatever winning is.
People who are using meth need help, right? But if you legalize and regulate meth, here's what's not gonna happen. People who have no interest in meth using meth all of a sudden. Like, just legalize it, regulate it, get people the help they need, take the power away from the cartels. Let's move on with our lives, please.
Yeah, it's not like if it's legal, I'm like, oh, all of a sudden I'd like to have all my teeth rot out, lose my mind and attack people randomly. Sure, I'll sign up for that. know, just make it a tiny bit safer. But so, of course, the wall is also for immigrants coming in. But this whole idea that it was going to win the war on drugs with the wall is so preposterous. As someone pointed out, and Trump didn't have an answer for during the campaign, they're like, well, they could dig underneath. And he's like, like he never thought of that. And now they can also fly above it with the drones. We caught one drone. God knows how many there are, dozens or hundreds out there. So this has just begun. All right, guys, much love. That's the show for today. Again, if you're watching online, I will have a special overtime edition for you guys. Plus, we have the post game for the members. So all of that at tytnetwork.com/join. And to the radio audience, much love and
bye-bye.
All right, welcome to the OT Overtime. We just made that up today. I don't know if that's what this is called. I don't know if this exists, but I decided that every day I ran out of time for stories. So every once in a while, when I can, depending on a lot of factors here, I'm going to give you some of those stories that I wanted to do in the main show, but couldn't fit into 2 hours. So, and they are, that doesn't mean they're not important stories. I think they're very important. Otherwise, I wouldn't bother doing this. All right. So, having said that, let's get started. So there's a guy going into a Steak and Shake in Sheridan, Colorado. Seems like an all-American activity, but he's apparently got the wrong kind of haircut. Now, we did a story about this a couple of days ago where Macklemore was accused of having a Nazi-style haircut. And Macklemore said, no, I got rid of that a year ago because of concerns. And he acknowledged that it was a concern. Apparently, this side of your head being shaved on both sides with a little bit of hair on top is now the neo-Nazi haircut. I didn't know that. And if you have one, that doesn't mean you're a neo-Nazi. And if someone else has one, don't attack them. That's a really bad idea. You have no idea why they have that haircut, which leads us back to this poor gentleman, Joshua Witt. So he's in a parking lot. He's going to get his milkshake when he is attacked. Someone knifed him, and they cut his hand pretty bad. So this is a little gruesome here, a little bit of blood if you're queasy. It's not too bad, but I want to show you that. So there he is bleeding all over his jeans. He's got the bandage on there, and you can see he got cut. Okay, so Joshua says, apparently my haircut is considered a neo-Nazi statement. Probably the poor guy went to Supercuts and had no idea. Anyway, by the way, I too am one of you, Joshua. Not in my haircut, but that I go to Supercuts. By the way, I have no idea if you actually go to Supercuts. Anyway, Joshua says, all I hear is, are you one of them neo-Nazis? As this dude is swinging a knife up over my car door at me. By the way, he got his hand up. He says, the dude was actually aiming for my head. I like how he keeps using the word dude. So you know why? Because he's a regular guy who's going to get a milkshake. In fact, he literally said, I was in more shock because I was just getting a milkshake. Luckily, no one said, I drink your milkshake. All right, look, this is a serious story. This is why, among the 1,000 reasons why you don't do violence. So first of all, you shouldn't do violence in the first place. It's immoral and counterproductive, and it never helps. Secondarily, even if you got the right guy, what they would have done is said, okay, now the left is violent, and we now have a right to defend ourselves and get even more violent. So that is a horrible idea, even if you actually had a neo-Nazi. But reason number 1,000 to not do violence is because very often you will get the wrong guy. So I remember in Greece, they had huge protests over the financial situation that they had there, and they were rightfully pissed at banking executives, which had gotten them into that mess in Greece. That was true. So what happened? Some violence broke out and they killed a teller. What did the poor bank teller have anything to do with it? They didn't have any power over the situation. And when the right wing does their attacks, and remember the Sikh temple that was attacked and all those people killed because the guy thought they were Muslim. It happens over and over again. Another right wing attack in the middle of the country trying to hit a Jewish community center. They didn't kill anyone Jewish, they killed Christians. So if they had killed Jews or Muslims, it would have been just as horrific. And when someone goes to commit an act of violence, they have let go of reason. And once you let go of reason, anything is possible. And in this case, any terrible act is possible. So don't let go of reason. Win the battle of ideas. And if you go into doing any kind of violence, it will strike back at you, and is not good for anyone, including most importantly our unity as a country. And they have not apprehended the guy yet, so we don't know if he is in fact a leftist or if Joshua's story is exactly true, and we'll see. And you could be against Nazis and not necessarily be a leftist, but obviously the fact pattern, if it holds, seems to indicate that. That's why I'm saying any act of violence by anyone on any side is a disastrous idea. Let the poor guy get his milkshake. Thank God he put his hand up and he's okay overall, and hopefully his hand heals, obviously. Okay, now let's go on to the folks who were at the alt-right rally in Virginia. Okay. So you all know what happened in Charlottesville. Now there's been some fallout for some of the people who participated. They were in a public event. They were happy to publicize it. They were all bragging about how they were going to unite the right, and they went out there with their torches and their signs and their flags and flew them proudly. Well, it's now come back to bite some of them. And I want to give you context and where I think it makes sense and where I'm a little concerned that we're not headed in the right direction when we look for some sort of retribution or consequences for the people who were at these rallies. And mind you, I know a lot of them were neo-Nazis and the Klan and white nationalists. So what I'm asking for is proportionality and for us to all look at this with as much care as we can. So there's one case, this guy's name is Nicholas Fuentes, he goes to Boston University. Now a couple of guys got pointed out that go to public universities. There's Washington State University, there's one in Reno, Nevada, and public universities can't do anything about it. You have freedom of speech and that is assured by the government, and hence they cannot take action against those students. Whether they should is a different and interesting question, but private universities can do anything they want. And so Fuentes apparently got kicked out of his university in Boston because it was a private one. Now in Inside Higher Ed, they write, Fuentes, who denied being a white nationalist and said he rejects Nazism, said the rally was about protesting immigration, multiculturalism, and postmodernism. Now if that's all you saw about Fuentes' opinions or this rally, you might say, oh come on, that's so unfair. You could have different opinions about immigration and multiculturalism and not be kicked out of your university. Hold, let's give you more context. He says, Fuentes himself says, the rally was about not replacing white people. Now if you're not familiar with white nationalist talk, that sounds really confusing. What do you mean not replacing white? Who's looking to replace white people and what do we replace them with? Because that's not actually how progressives think, and so that's such a bizarre ideology that somehow somebody's trying to replace you. Where would we put you? Anyway, but when you look at what they were chanting in Charlottesville, you begin to understand what he's saying, and he's going to clarify it himself too. This is from a Vice documentary, a really great one on what happened there. This is the beginning of that documentary. We'll have the link down below for the whole thing about what they in fact were chanting on Friday night. Let's watch. Come on, if you were at that rally, you knew exactly what was going on. The tortures at a white nationalist get together in the middle of the night was kind of a dead giveaway, let alone blood and soil, the Nazi chant. But you will not replace us was confusing until they got to the Jews will not replace us. And I was like, oh, that's where they're going with this, which brings us back to Fuentes. He says, you can call us racist, white supremacists, Nazis, and bigots. You can disavow us on social media from your cushy campus reform job, but you will not replace us. The rootless transnational elite knows that a tidal wave of white identity is coming, and they know that once the word gets out, they will not be able to stop us. the fire rises. So let me assure you that his university kicking him out did not lead me to shed a tear. So this guy could easily create a hostile environment on campus. He is unlikely to have a healthy relationship with the rest of the student body, depending on their views and apparently their race or their religion. So, you know, I'm not saying that I would have made the same decision, but I certainly find the decision understandable and justifiable, given concerns that the people who went to this rally chanted the things that you just saw. And of course, there was actual violence, and Heather Heyer was killed and 19 others injured. Now, Fuentes didn't do that, but he participated in these hateful chants and this hateful rally in the first place. Now, I think the next case is a little more difficult. It involves a guy named Alan Armantrout, who is a bit of a character. He believes in the Confederacy, and he has a particular take on it that I want to share with you in a second. But he did not attend those rallies. He came later to defend the Robert E. Lee statue. And let me show you one more picture. He got a lot of people who were not happy with him, including that lady in that picture. In fact, we've got a video of other people chanting and calling him, in essence, a terrorist. Let's take a look at that.
Terrorists go home! 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 Racist go home.
I wanted to honor my ancestors today, sir. They need to know that what they fought for wasn't slavery or oppression of people.
Where were they and where are they?
Thank you, sir.
Flag is back there.
When
put it in
citizens are being terrorized by him.
You're doing what you asked.
Can't walk out of the park by yourself, huh? So proud and brave.
You want another day like Saturday, don't you? You should be ashamed of yourself.
That blood is on your hands,
no, it's not
mine.
Okay, this one's a lot more complicated. First of all, I got to comment on what happened at the end of that video. At that point, we already know that someone's been killed, and it has been called by almost everyone in government outside of Donald Trump as an act of domestic terrorism, including the Justice Department. So that's why they're chanting about terrorists go home. And when the cop says you want another Saturday to a counter-protester, to someone who's fighting against fascism, well, that's not helpful. That sounds like he's saying that it was the counter-protester's fault, and that's why she gets frustrated at the end. So that, and look, they're putting him in the cop car. I don't know that he broke any laws. I think they were just trying to get him safely out of that area and not cause any more trouble. I don't blame him for that at all. I don't blame the cops for that at all. On the other hand, is there a little bit of white privilege here? You think that if there was a rally where some black or Muslim radical, let's call it Muslim because you all are going to agree to this. A Muslim radical had run somebody over in an act of domestic terrorism, had injured 19 people, killed somebody, and then someone supporting that Muslim radical shows up the next day with a giant weapon. Did you see that weapon on him? And then he had a handgun too. And the cops go, oh no, that's perfectly okay. Yeah. You're just saluting the rally that just happened where that person was murdered. That's totally fine. No, keep your weapon on you, no big deal. Oh, we're gonna put you in the cop car. If you don't mind, put the longer weapon in the back, but you can keep your handgun on you while you drive with the cops. That's not how it would have gone down, and you know it. You think they would have let a guy supporting a Muslim terrorist go into the car like that with weaponry, let alone protest out there for however long he did? No freaking way they would have allowed that. Okay, but again, it's not that clear cut here in the case of Armantrout as to what he believes. He said neo-Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan were distorting the history of the American South, and that Lee, General Lee, was one of the greatest Americans who ever lived. Now, that's less controversial. And so I don't agree with him at all on his interpretation of history. The Confederacy was all about slavery, and I think that the Klan is kind of right to say that it was about slavery. They're just on the opposite side of me on that issue. They thought it was not so bad. I thought it was horrific, as along with almost all decent people in America. Armantrout goes on to say they need to know what they fought for wasn't slavery or oppression. Just not remotely true. Read the writings of the people who declared war against America, who led the Confederacy. They all say that it was about slavery. And your state right to do what? Sell peaches? No, it was your state right to own slaves. So I think Armantrout is involved in insane revisionist history. But you get to be in this country, and he was saying that he was disavowing the Klan and the Nazis, and that they had misinterpreted his love and other people's love for the Confederacy. I don't think he should have that love in the first place, but it's a different point altogether. I would not have kicked him out of school for that. Now, it's a private school, they get to do whatever they want, and it's a Pensacola Christian college. I mean, again, this story is so fascinating, it has so many angles, because on the one hand, you have evangelicals in this country like Jerry Falwell Jr. going on TV to defend Trump, saying, oh no, he was right about his both sides comment. That is not the Christian thing to say when you had an act of domestic terrorism where a Nazi killed somebody in America. So Jerry Falwell is a hideous person. Here's a Christian college going the opposite direction, wanting to make sure that they protect all Americans and are trying to do the Christian thing, but I think they might have gone too far. I think that Armantrout, although I completely disagree with him, has an opinion that is not worthy of expulsion from a university. Now, and anyone who watches this show knows I have great, enormous disdain for the Confederacy, but we should be allowed to disagree with one another, as long as it didn't, what happened in Charlottesville doesn't happen. Again, I think it's horrible judgment on his part to then go salute the statue the day after someone dies. But we're gonna ask you guys in a second, we're gonna have a poll question about whether it's the right thing to do or not. But that's my take. Here's another one I don't agree with. Richard Spencer, an outspoken white supremacist who attended the Unite the Right rally, and Jason Kessler, who organized it, both hold degrees from the University of Virginia. A petition has circulated in recent days with more than 9,000 signatures calling on the institution to revoke their degrees. I don't think their degrees should be revoked. So they actually did go to University of Virginia, whether we like it or not. And they did get that degree, and that ship has sailed. So if you attended the UVA, as some of our hosts did, well, that sucks. You don't want these kind of literal neo-Nazi in the case of Richard Spencer and these hateful guys like Jason Keller, who had to delete his account, by the way, after implying that Heather Heyer deserved what she got. She was the woman who was murdered by the Nazi. I mean, these are terrible, terrible guys. But you can't undo history. So Donald Trump, for example, went to the school I went to. We both went to Penn. We both went to the business school. What, revoke his degree because he's a moron? I mean, look, was there corruption in him going? Did his daddy get him in when his grades were probably miserable? I'd love to see his transcript from Fordham when he transferred into Penn. Did he have straight A's? I'll bet you any amount of money his report card was a mess. He wasn't winning with it. I'm positive, I'm not positive, you'd have to get the transcripts to be positive. I believe that it was his dad who got him into that school. Nonetheless, the corruption at that time existed. To some degree it exists today. So it is what it is, and I don't think we should be taking away people's degrees. And in fact, let me ask, hey Sue, if you can, bring up the poll. And then I'm gonna give you one case that's clear on the other side where you actually do have to take action. But what we wanna ask you guys, and it's tytnetwork.com/booted, is should you be kicked out of college for going to the Charlottesville rally? I mean, you saw the chance there. So again, Armantrout didn't go to that rally, he didn't hold a torch, and he didn't chant the Nazi chants. So I think he's a separate situation. But if you go to the rally, is that good enough for a private university to kick you out? I think it's a really interesting question, and I'm curious what you guys think. Okay, now, final case doesn't have to do with universities. It has to do with a cop who was supporting these guys online. His name is Phil Ryan, he's a Texas police officer, and he put up online something that he called a public service announcement. He said, criminal mischief vandalism is a crime, referring to people taking down the Confederate monuments. So let's say someone is defacing or destroying a monument or a statue, not that it happens, just a hypothetical, that would be criminal mischief under Texas Penal Code. So far, none of this is controversial. You know, whether it's actually criminal mischief or not is something for the courts to adjudicate. Okay, that's like his opinion, man. The fact that he's a cop is relevant, but so far not bad. But then he goes on to say, Chapter 942 states, deadly force to protect property. A person is justified in using deadly force against another to protect land or tangible, movable property. Uh-oh, now that's a cop saying if you see someone touching a Confederate monument, shoot him. If that wasn't clear enough, he goes on to say, bottom line, if someone is destroying a monument or statue that isn't theirs, you can defend it by force during the day with deadly force at night. Okay. See, that's a completely different situation. Now we're talking about a cop whose job is to protect all of us, and he's encouraging vigilante justice. Boom, right there, already completely unacceptable for a cop. He goes on to say at the end, just a little tip from your Uncle Phil. No, dude, you're not my uncle. You're a police officer, and you're paid by all of us to protect all of us. So that's an easy and clear line. I think he should be fired immediately for encouraging people to shoot and execute people for what he admits is a misdemeanor, criminal mischief. That you should not be shooting people for that, and encouraging that kind of violence as a cop is clearly over the line. Look, these are not easy issues for all of us to grapple with. If you're a decent person, you don't like anybody at that rally, you don't agree with Donald Trump, that there was, quote, very fine people at that rally, you know what those chants meant, and you know the actions that came from that. And I think pursuing the Fields, who's a terrorist who allegedly ran over Heather Heyer, is the least we can do. Firing cops who encourage vigilante justice and shooting fellow citizens is very sensible, and we'll see if Texas takes that action in the case of Phil Ryan. But when it comes to guys like Armin Trout, where they're expressing an opinion that is deeply unpopular and one that I disagree with 100%, I'm not sure that that's something that you should expel someone over. So it's super hard to figure out at what point they encourage violence, at what point they become a force on campus that creates more disruption and potential violence. But just saying someone has an opinion you don't agree with, even if it is a horrific opinion, starts to cross a line I am uncomfortable with. So don't let them lie to you about what happened at that rally. It's very clear what happened at that rally. The consequence of that is a different question, and one that I'm literally asking you. I'm very curious to see how that poll comes out. All right, that's the whole story. Now, last story for you guys is about climate change and what Donald Trump is not doing about it. Okay. So you know that Donald Trump doesn't believe in climate change. He has called it a Chinese hoax in the past. He took us out of the Paris Climate Accord. It's been a disaster all around. He's now added to that disaster with this latest piece of news. Let's go to HuffPost, Lydia O'Connor writing in this case. President Donald Trump's administration has dissolved a federal panel of scientists and other experts tasked with helping create and implement a new policy based on the latest climate change research findings. So if you claim that you're in favor of science and you're a Republican, that has now become an oxymoron. Lots of morons running around these days in the Republican Party, including oxymorons. No, he is disbanding science and anything we would do with scientific findings. A spokeswoman for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which established the panel in 2015, confirmed Sunday that the Department of Commerce would not renew the charter for the Sustained National Climate Assessments Federal Advisory Committee. So who's on the committee? Well, you know, if you're a right winger these days, you might say, oh, no good scientists. Of course, you can't trust scientists. All right, well, there we have your answer as to whether you believe in science or not. Or you might say, oh no, it's a bunch of hippies, but they didn't take into account other shareholders or stakeholders in this, including business interests. Well, Again, you'd be wrong. Let me tell you who was on the committee. The committee, a panel of scientists, local government employees, corporate representatives, and experts in related fields, was tasked with decoding the findings from the climate assessment and developing guidelines for climate change related endeavors, such as risk management and assessment efforts, economic policies, technology development, and communication practices. None of which will happen going forward. Who needs technology development? No. Better communication? Hell no. Doing something about climate change? Oh, that's a big F no. So, if you actually believe that climate change isn't real, you wouldn't fire scientists. You'd hire more scientists, because you'd be convinced of your opinion and you'd realize, oh my God, if we did more science, we'll figure out that I'm actually right. But they don't think that. They know they're lying. That's why they go around firing scientists and anyone who will actually study the issue and tell you the facts. So this is not the only thing they've done. The last NCAA report, released in 2014, made those implications for US residents clear, and many of the threats it predicted, more triple digit temperatures, increased precipitation catastrophes, and the failing of dated infrastructure, have already begun to emerge. Well, that's even worse. They made predictions, they came true. Now we really got to cover it up, fire everyone in the building. So earlier this summer, HuffPost continues, the Department of Interior led the charter for a similar Obama era panel. The Advisory Committee on Climate Change and Natural Resources Science expire. So they've been doing this in many different departments. Now finally, the National Climate Assessment, which has been published three times since the passage of a 1990 law mandating its publication, includes findings gathered by scientists from multiple federal agencies and has shown the devastating impact of human activity on rising global temperatures and related natural disasters in the US. Those are the facts, and they are inconvenient facts for the Trump administration. So rather than trying to find out facts on their side, they're not even pretending. They know that the facts are against them, so they're just firing the people who brought you the facts. That's Trump 101. And if you're voting for Republicans, and in this case it's not just Trump, all the Republicans officials, including Mike Pence's vice president, including the Republican establishment, are on the same side. Know what you're getting and don't pretend otherwise. All right, that's what we got for you. And now that I'm disastrously late to my next meeting, we can go forward. We'll see you guys tomorrow.